Hey, cassettes, and welcome back to the Black Case Diaries.
The Black Case Diaries.
Hey.
Really?
Beth? Yes.
Yeah.
Did you walk into the wrong podcast studio?
Oh, shoot. I can't think of my class.
The Black Tape Diaries. Oh, that one?
Oh, yeah.
That's not us.
Nope.
If you were looking for the Black Tape Diaries, I'm so sorry.
Yes.
Welcome.
Welcome anyway. We're three old friends learning everything we can about movies and TV and hopefully teaching you in the process. I'm Robin.
I'm Marcy.
And I'm Adam.
Yay.
Ooh, did you like that voice cry?
Yeah. It brought me back.
Still get those, damn it.
As this year's Animation April comes to a close, we thought we could discuss a topic that has been on our list for quite some time. During past years, we've covered the histories behind several animation studios like Pixar, Laika, Cartoon Saloon, Amblimation, and Blue Sky. We've discussed the history of animation, the rise of Walt Disney, and even the history behind a few specific animated films. And after poring over countless articles, watching several documentaries and DVD commentaries, and tracking down dozens of library books on the topic, we noticed that there was something, actually a lot of things, missing from the history of animation. Women.
Yep.
At least in all of the stories that we read.
Yes.
I really was racking my brain. Yeah. I was like...
They're just like not mentioned.
I don't remember like,
nothing ever being mentioned.
Yeah. You know,
I want to say there was like two or three names.
Yeah. When we talked about, I think Blue Sky, there was a few names
Maybe in there.
But really, especially when we talk about the history, like the beginning of animation, and especially when we talk about Walt Disney.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everything. You look at all the pictures and every... We talked about Looney Tunes and Termite Terrace and all that stuff. And there's not a single...
There's not a single lady in there.
Nope. You know? But it's not as though women simply weren't there in the early days of animation. In fact, women worked on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, one of the first full-length animated films. However, women were almost always relegated to ink and paint departments, which meant that they were responsible for creating animation cells based on drawings. It was an incredibly important part of the medium, but these women had no creative input on the final product. For many years, women were either consistently rejected from animation and story departments, or they were hired and not given credit for their work.
Yep. It's
across movie making in general, that one.
Yeah, yep. That's what I was starting to read one of the books that we got some of our information from. And one of the main women said that she went to go, you know, there were only so many people that could go to the premiere of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. Only so many were allowed. Right. And of course, the ink and paint department, there were so many women. And of course, they were not invited. But Walt Disney's wife was, of course, and she was a previous ink and paint artist.
Oh.
And then I believe it was Bianca that got to go, which we'll bring her name up later.
Yeah.
But she went, she got to go, but she was one of the only women that got to go and see the movie.
Isn't it amazing, too, because we talked about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We did a whole episode on it.
Yep.
And isn't it amazing how this story... about a woman would not even have done very well if he hadn't had any kind of input from women. So today, we're heading back in time to take a second look at the history of animation. But this time, we're paying extra close attention to the people who, until recently, never got the credit that they deserved. We will list just some of the women whose influence on the medium can still be seen today, from the very first female animators to the women that helped make some of the first Disney animated classics. So grab some snacks and settle in. It's time to learn about the history of women in animation.
I guess I can't really have the perspective here, but would, like, both of these suck, but would you rather, like, do it and not be credited or be not allowed to do it at all? You know what I mean? Mm. It's just like
I mean, they were definitely paving the way.
So, I mean, I would rather do it.
That's kind of where my head is at.
Yeah.
Again, I don't have the true perspective here, but it's like, because at least you're doing it and like getting in the door and who knows, you could convince
someday, someone will find out that you did it. Because that's what happened with these people that we're going to talk about.
If they hadn't done it, first,
yeah,
then the people now would not be around, yeah, probably. Yep.
So let's go back to the beginning, shall we? In 1906, J. Stuart Blackton jump-started the history of modern animation with the humorous phases of Funny Faces and Phantasmagory, two pieces that are generally considered to be the first animated films. Shortly after, Winsor McCay expanded on the art form with character animation in his films featuring Little Nemo and Gertie the Dinosaur. Just a few years later, dozens of animation studios were popping up in New York City alone, and the era known as the cartoon boom began. Winsor McCay would incorporate animation into his vaudeville performances as early as 1914, and recently a historian named Mindy Johnson discovered that there was a woman who was doing something similar in the early 1920s. Bessie Mae Kelly was an animation pioneer that traveled vaudeville circuits, advertising herself as the only woman animator on tour. Kelly studied art at the New York Pratt Institute when she fell in love with film. She started out in the industry washing film cells and worked her way up. Eventually, she would be working among famed animators like Max Fleischer and Paul Terry. Kelly provided hand-drawn animation for Aesop's Fables, a collection of animated shorts adapted from the collection of stories of the same name. Kelly created the first ever mouse couple, and they appeared in Aesop's Fables.
Hey.
A mouse couple.
Oh, a mouse nice. Couple.
Huh. Oh,
yeah. Interesting.
Nobody ever did that again. Yeah. Right?
According to historian Mindy Johnson, Walt Disney himself said that he was inspired to make animation that looked as good as the Aesop cartoons of the
1920s.
Uh-huh. Oh, look at that.
Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Walt, what he had to say for yourself? Yeah.
He was clearly influenced by them. Yeah. He admitted it.
Yep. Mm.
Bessie Mae Kelly animated and directed her own short films that are now considered to be the first movies to be hand-drawn and directed by a woman. While some have been restored, at least three of her films were lost due to corrosion.
Damn.
Yeah. But her remaining sketches prove that Kelly worked on productions that historians never even knew existed.
Damn, dang, man.
Historian Mindy Johnson discovered Bessie Mae Kelly's history when she stumbled upon a newspaper article about a vaudeville act featuring, quote, the only woman animator. Mindy contacted other animation historians asking if they had ever heard of this animator. One of Johnson's colleagues showed her an illustration by Frank Mosher, who worked at Bray Studios, an early animation house that employed the Fleischer brothers. The image is of a group of men with one woman present that no one had previously identified. Johnson's colleague told her that the woman was probably a cleaning lady or a secretary.
Oh, jeez.
Of course.
But Johnson was able to match the woman in the picture to a photograph of Bessie Mae.
Nice. She's like, no. I'm not going to speculate.
Not just going to assume.
No. Yeah. We're not going to assume.
Just send me the sketch. Yeah.
Because honestly, it would be, if yeah. they posed for this sketch.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. Cleaning lady, come
on in.
Come on in. You know what I mean? It just seems yeah. much
she just
less
happened
like,
to be there that day.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So there had to be a big reason
yes.
for her to be there. So.
Yeah. Determined to know more, Mindy Johnson tracked down relatives that held onto the animator's letters and film reels. Johnson was able to get two of Kelly's films restored and premiered them at the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures in 2022. She hopes to release a book about Bessie Mae and possibly other early women animators whose work has been lost to time.
Wow, that's
that would be awesome.
Much more recent than I thought.
Yeah,
you were gonna say.
This was yeah. just. I mean, this
oh,
is
yeah.
a this
wow,
is a new
that's
discovery.
Incredible.
Yep.
And it's interesting too because the shorts that she was able to get restored, those came out in 1921, 1922.
Wow.
So they were 100 years
oh
old.
Oh my gosh.
When
that's
she,
pretty cool.
Yeah.
That it was, yeah, that timing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And one thing that really stood out to me too is that on the title card, she said it was amazing to see, you know, directed and animated by, but also it aww. She went by B.M. Kelly,
oh.
which makes sense. Because
yeah, because again, yeah, she wouldn't want to be identified as a woman because,
yeah.
oh no.
Throw that in the trash.
That's not
but,
good.
But I love that when it was an act,
yeah.
like, you know, when she was drawing in crowds, she's like, that's right.
Yeah.
Come see me.
Yes.
I'm the only woman
animator.
Yeah. When asked about the meaning behind uncovering Bessie Mae Kelly's work, Mindy Johnson told the American Film Institute, We have a responsibility to change the history books, and history is exactly that, his story. It is predominantly written about, preserved, and archived, and documented from a male perspective. There really were more women in front of and behind the camera than there are today. And there were more women working in animation than anyone ever realized.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, that makes me think of, like, just history in general.
Yeah, interesting, yeah. Right?
Just like if yeah.
I think
you know,
about that all the time.
You discover this stuff, like, now, recently.
Yep.
What else? Not related to animation, not related to movies, just anything?
In general.
Yeah.
What, you know, what are we missing?
We're finding stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yep. In the early 1920s, when cartoon animation took the world by storm, Charlotte, or Lottie Reiniger, was pioneering stop-motion animation in her birth country of Germany. From a young age, Reiniger showed a lot of artistic promise. She was talented in Scherenschnitt, which is German for scissor cuts, and would cut silhouettes from paper. Reiniger wowed her friends and family with her art, putting on puppet shows with her work. Her career in film began when filmmakers recruited her to create title cards for silent films.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so cool.
So she was working for a long time. And if you guys saw, we'll put some pictures in the blog.
Yeah.
If you guys saw her work, it's mind-blowing. Whoa. Like, it's beautiful.
In 1918, Reiniger animated the rat sequences in The Pied Piper of Hamelin, a silent film directed by Paul Wegener. By the early 1920s, when Walt Disney was just beginning to form his own animation studio, Reiniger was directing stop-motion films starring her paper silhouettes. Many of these movies were based on fairy tales, like Cinderella from 1922.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I think it's important to place Walt Disney in there so that you can kind of understand where in the timeline we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because this is, she produced Cinderella a year before Walt Disney even founded his studio.
Wow.
So, like, this stuff is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh
my God. Wow, look at that.
We're looking at
I'm showing them just like a clip of her stop-motion animation.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I mean, absolutely mind-blowing. Oh my
God. That's really cool.
I mean, like, in college, I took a bookmaking class.
Look at how fluid that is.
And so I cut out pretty intricate things. And yeah. I could not imagine, like, the amount of time dedication that she put to these, because, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you remember, like, a few movies have done it, but the one that comes to mind is the beginning of Jungle Book 2.
Yeah.
It's the, like, paper puppets in front of a fire, you know what I'm talking about? Like, shadow puppets. Yeah. That's what that looks like.
Yeah.
But this stop motion, it's on a different kind of level because it's
so fluid.
Yeah.
It's so smooth. And everything that you see, she cut it herself with scissors. And she would do like paper, card, wire, you know, she created the elaborate puppets that were needed to do it. And this is a style that when you look at it, it's striking.
Yeah.
But it's also familiar.
Yeah.
Because we still see things like this in movies today and in title cards and credits, you know, and this is something that really influenced animation.
I can't imagine having to cut the same face twice and have it look remotely the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to have a character blink or something.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The trick that we did in college, because we, you know, because you, of course, can have X-Acto knives can help with those kind of things. We used, like, scalpels, like medical scalpels in order
real
to get
sharp
more.
Stuff.
Yeah, because they're much sharper and more precise. So, I don't know. Hopefully she had
scissors.
Some stuff like that. But, man, if it was just scissors, gosh. In 1926... Lottie Reiniger directed one of the first ever feature-length animated films, The Adventures of Prince Ahmed.
It is the oldest surviving feature-length animated film.
Wow.
It is just over an hour long, so it's about the same length as Dumbo. And it came out in 1926, 13 years before Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
My God.
Wow. But women don't belong in animation.
Yeah, no. Not at all. Get him out.
Get him out.
That's what Walt Disney thought.
I know, seriously. More
like Manimation. am I right?
That was a sick joke. That was good. That was a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Her complex creations were unlike anything seen in film before, as Reiniger would even layer her silhouettes on panes of glass to give the film a layered look. This was nearly 10 years before the invention of the multi-plane camera.
I thought about that when I was just looking at it. I thought maybe that because they were like different. They were almost like different levels of because they're all black.
Yes.
Yeah.
Different levels of like, I guess, darkness. You know, the closer ones and the further away ones kind of had a different tone.
So
good grief.
Incredible.
When I read that she had done that with the panes of glass.
Yeah.
Nothing in it mentioned the multiplane camera. They didn't mention that.
No.
But I felt it was necessary to mention that because it's very similar to what a multiplane camera does.
Yes.
The principle of it is essentially the same.
Yeah.
Reiniger and her husband fled Germany just as Hitler rose to power and settled in the UK after World War II. She continued to animate for several decades, directing more than 60 films, about which 40 still remain. Her influence can still be seen in films today.
Yeah.
Yeah. The style is, we keep throwing out the word timeless, but when you come up with something so unique at that time, it's just like, of course people are going to continue to do that because it's beautiful and it works.
It really, it's absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. There's so much that we still don't know. And like, we're discovering more about these people all the time.
Yep.
So it's like, is this the first female animator or is this the first female? And that's kind of the question.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, when did she start? What was going on? You know, it is. It's kind of tough to say, who really was.
Yeah.
But she definitely was a pioneer in stop motion animation.
Yeah. There are many records of pioneering women animators in the early 1920s and 30s, and we could never mention all of them. For example, there's Valentina and Zenaida Brumberg, Jewish animators who began animating in the 1920s and continued to direct films for about 50 years. Another animator, Ermina Tirlova, is considered to be the mother of Czech animation and directed over 60 stop-motion films throughout her career. We wish we could talk about everyone, but this is a topic that is just too vast for just one episode.
Jeez, I mean,
just
from the first however long we've been going, like this would be a month's worth of information or more even.
The more I looked, the more names I found.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The more pieces, the more dates, and it's just, that's kind of the point of the episode.
Yeah.
We really just kind of can't state it enough.
Yeah. So if you take anything away from this episode, remember, women were there.
Yeah.
Women were animators.
Yeah.
Even like, before Disney.
I was going to say, it seems like not only were they there, but it's like they kind of started it.
Yeah. They pioneered. In 1923, Walt and Roy Disney founded Disney Brothers Studios. The pair quickly became well-known in the animation industry with their silent Alice comedies adapted from Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. But unlike today, Disney was not the most famous name in animation. Not yet, anyway. 2 years earlier, in 1921, Max and Dave Fleischer started their own independent animation studios. They had been working for Bray Studios, and the pair had created a successful series of cartoons called Out of the Inkwell, which demonstrated Max's invention of the rotoscope. Over the next decade, Max Fleischer would become a household name in the animation world, with the studio creating some of the most iconic cartoons of the 1930s, such as Betty Boop and Popeye.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Some classics.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, we definitely talked about them in our animation.
Yes, we did.
History episode. Yeah. So.
This was like a prominent... This was definitely a prominent competition for Disney at the time.
One of my favorite things to see is when people discover these old cartoons for the first time and just get totally blown away by them. Because not only do they still look great, but some of the jokes and things that happen in them are beyond anything we would think about now.
Yeah.
I remember one specific thing was a Popeye episode where mm-hmm. he and the really big guy who's always the villain of the episodes, mm-hmm. I can't remember his name, were doing like a shooting competition, right, okay. with a pistol, and they were just shooting bottles off of a thing, right?
Okay.
And what this person made a post about it, and they were I had no idea what to expect with that ending, but the ending blew me away or whatever.
Yeah.
Because what happened is when it was Popeye's turn, rather than pick the gun up, he took it, ate it essentially, and spit the bullets out to win the competition. Oh, it's like gosh. Only Popeye would do that.
Of course.
Because he, you know, eat the spinach and become ridiculously strong and be able to do that. You know what I mean? And it's one of the funniest things to see people witness. It's like, you've got to be kidding me right
how
now.
How insane.
How absurd.
Ridiculous.
That is.
Yeah.
I love that old stuff.
Just as Fleischer Studios was finding its footing, Lillian Friedman Astor began working for a small commercial studio. According to Astor, the company only had about 5 people, which gave her the opportunity to learn how to become an in-betweener. Intrigued by Walt Disney's animation, Astor applied to work at his studio. She was rejected and later said that the letter he sent her specifically stated that he did not hire women in creative departments.
Ugh.
In 1931, Astor landed a job with Fleischer Brothers Studios as an in-betweener. In 1933, she was promoted to animator and is believed to be the first American female animator to work for a major studio.
Wow.
Yeah, unless you count Bessie May working for Bray Studios.
Whatever.
You don't know. You don't know.
Yeah. At about the same time, animator Laverne Harding received her first film credit while working for Walter Lantz Productions. She would be best known for animating the classic cartoon Woody the Woodpecker.
Oh, classic. Absolute classic.
Which was created by Lantz. Harding was good friends with Looney Tunes animator Tex Avery and would work on some of his cartoons as well. Astor worked on 42 films with the studio and was only credited for 6 of them.
Like, why, though? You know what I mean? Like, what is putting her name on it do to ruin it for you? You know what I mean?
How much more work is that?
Come on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about Disney not hiring women in creative departments.
Yeah.
He was not alone. Yeah. It was kind of like the industry standard at this point to not hire women in creative departments in animation. So they just didn't want people to know, I guess.
Huh. Did they not want to feel inferior somehow?
For some reason, my mind goes to this, but I think about how, like, you know, the classic thing is, like, you know, women belong in the kitchen. You know, that was always like saying or whatever.
Yeah.
But yet, like, men were the chefs. If you were a chef, you were a man, you know.
That's so true,
and
actually.
So it's like,
when it's a profession, when it's a profession.
Exactly.
When it's serious.
So it feels, this kind of feels similar. It's like, oh, yeah, women are totally in it. They're doing it and stuff. But the only true animator is a man.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The story goes, really, that another animator liked her work and secretly trained her to be an animator. She was an in-betweener.
Gotcha.
He took her under his wing. He secretly trained her. Yeah. And then basically what he did, this is like the story that I read.
Okay.
Was that basically what he did was he had her animate something and then he played it for like the heads of the studio or whatever without telling them that
it was
a woman animated it and they loved it and
kinda
so
like
she
the
was
BM
so she was kind of clandestinely hired to be an animator.
Interesting.
Nice.
Okay.
When not everybody at the studio I think knew that she was animating, so it was kind of like a secret.
Well, that's
cool.
That's cool but also dumb.
Yeah.
In 1937, she participated in a labor strike against Fleischer, which was the first major labor dispute in animation history. And don't worry, more followed.
Sure did.
Yeah. Astor joined the Commercial Artists and Designers Union as a result. Astor felt that management treated her badly afterwards, and the studio moved to Florida in an attempt to bust the union. Lillian Friedman Astor left Fleischer Brothers Studios shortly after their move and was unable to find another job in the animation industry. She credited this to her part in the union and to the fact that she was a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the mid to late 1930s, Walt Disney's work began to stand out among many popular cartoons of the time. His work quickly evolved from the quick movements of silly characters to a more realistic representation of animals coupled with interesting stories. Although Walt Disney was clear that he was not interested in hiring women in any creative departments of his studio, a few trailblazing people were able to break down the barrier. They were met with sexism and gender discrimination, but eventually were able to earn the respect of their co-workers and pave the way for women in animation. Bianca Majuli attended the same high school as Walt Disney. The two of them crossed paths, and Walt even doodled in Majuli's yearbook. Look at that. She went on to study composition, anatomy, and painting at Chicago Academy of Fine Arts, and began a career as a fashion designer. In the late 1920s, Majuli moved to New York and began designing brochures for JCPenney. In 1934, she saw one of Disney's shorts for the first time and realized the success that he had achieved. So she wrote a letter to Walt Disney requesting an interview.
Ooh. Yeah.
Interview me for this job, please. Yes,
I will take it. Thank you.
We went to same high school. I'm just as good as you. Thank you very much. And you should interview me.
And I graduated the Chicago Academy of Fine Arts. Dude,
yeah.
Art academies now are like difficult.
Yes.
I don't know, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. She was definitely qualified.
Yes.
Yeah.
For the job.
And I think she actually was a pen pal with him for a little bit before she did send that final, like, hey, you want to interview me?
Actually, yeah. Now that we're friends.
Now that we're friends.
And I see the I see the big shot you've become.
You know. Yeah. After, you know, she got his ego up a bit. You know?
Oh, that's how you do
just
it.
Just kind of.
Walt agreed to meet with Majuli, and he was impressed with her portfolio, including a self-produced comic strip about a girl trying to find a job during the Depression. Walt offered Majuli a position in the story department. As the first and only woman at the time, Majuli earned one-fifth of the salary than that of the men. While she was paid $18, they were paid $100.
Criminal.
Freaking Christ.
Freaking criminal.
In Natalia Holt's book, The Queens of Animation, the author depicts the struggles that Majuli experienced while on the writing team at Disney. She would skip as many story meetings as possible because they were often humiliating. Majuli recalled one instance when Walt embarrassed her in front of the team. And when she left the room, a group of male writers chased her to her office, banging on her door. Majuli cowered inside as the men broke down the door to further ridicule her.
Jesus Christ, why?
I don't even know. And then it fueled the fire because then Walt was like, this is why I don't... You know, hire women, they're too sensitive.
They can't handle this.
Jesus Christ.
It's like, what, you mean to tell me that the other men are chased to their...
Yeah, exactly what I was going
to
say.
After a meeting, they're chased to their office and their door is broken down.
Imagine how scary that would be.
Oh, yeah, it would be terrifying.
Because, like, these are not... your friends.
No.
You know?
And they're grown men. Like,
you are alone.
Yeah.
In this like confined space.
Yeah.
And they were trying to intimidate her. They were trying
absolutely.
To make her feel scared. Years later, Disney legends Frank Thomas and Ollie Johnston credited Majuli for being the person that taught the department one of the most vital lessons in storytelling. Quote, pathos gives comedy the heart and warmth that keeps it from becoming brittle. They went so far as to say that they would not have been able to make any of their animated classics without learning this lesson.
I believe that.
Majuli shaped many of Disney Animation's early classics. Because she was born in Italy and fluent in the language, she even translated the original Pinocchio to English so that the studio could adapt it. Majuli only worked for Disney for a few years. In 1940, she went on an extended vacation. Upon her return, she found that her desk had been cleared out and her position had been filled. She later married and opened an art gallery. There you go.
Man.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. That upsets me.
I can't imagine coming back from a vacation mm-hmm. and your stuff is just gone. Dude. You've just been fired, basically. Yep. Yeah.
In 1936, Walt Disney hired Grace Huntington. She was an accomplished pilot, but unable to serve in the military because of her gender. Huntington faced similar discrimination as Majoli before her, and the women supported each other throughout their careers. Huntington recalled her first story meeting when a security guard would not allow her in the room because she was a woman. He told her that women were only part of the ink and paint departments. Eventually, she was able to get inside, and when her colleagues saw her, they whistled. Grace recalled Walt Disney telling her, "You know, I don't like to hire a woman in the story department. In the first place, it takes years to train a good story man. Then if the story man turns out to be a story girl, the chances are 10-1 that she will marry and leave the studio high and dry, with all the money that had been spent on her training gone to waste, and there would be nothing to show for it."
I mean, just the fact that he even said story girl.
Yes.
Not story woman. Story girl.
Man and then story girl.
Yep.
Story lady.
Yeah. No.
And like the idea that you were a waste of money.
Yeah.
You know?
That too.
Because you weren't there for as long as somebody else.
Yeah.
It's like you could be like, there for a couple of years and have a bigger impact than somebody who was there for 15 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
But to just out of the gate say, well, it wouldn't be worth the money. Grace Huntington worked on many of the Mickey and Minnie Mouse cartoons and Silly Symphonies. She also advocated for Disney to hire more female writers, like Dorothy Ann Blanc, who is the sole woman writer credited on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah. Wow.
Retta Scott studied at Chouinard Art Institute, a leading art school in California that would eventually be absorbed into CalArts.
Even back then, CalArts was... Yep. Feeding into Disney.
Yeah. Because of her passion for drawing animals, her professors urged the young artist to work for Disney. It wasn't until Scott saw Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs that she was convinced to apply. Scott's mentor at Chouinard was a close friend of Walt Disney and recommended her for a job in the storyboard department, which was working on the film Bambi. She worked on a scene involving hunting dogs, and she made them into snarling, vicious beasts. The other animators were blown away by Retta's technical skill, and she was offered the chance to animate the scene. Because of this, Retta Scott was the first woman to have an animation credit on a Walt Disney film.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Scott stayed on at Disney for a few years, becoming known as a specialist in animal drawing. Retta left Disney in 1946 to get married, but would do freelance work for the company for several years, illustrating many Disney Golden Books.
Yeah, so when she was doing the drawings for Bambi, they said the other animators were just like, first of all, you're super young. She's 22 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
They're like, we had no idea that somebody so young could have such technical skill. And
yeah.
So if you watch the opening credits of Bambi, you will see her name. Listed among the animators.
Former architect Sylvia Holland was hired to work in the story department of then Walt Disney Productions in 1939. She was the first woman to be a member of the Royal Institute of British Architects and had been living in Vancouver with her family for several years before she relocated to Southern California. Holland was a widow and single mother of two children. Once she arrived in the U.S., she had to find a new career because her degree wasn't recognized in America, which is the dumbest crap in the world.
Boy,
she didn't learn it from Americans. That doesn't even matter. She began illustrating for Universal Pictures before she saw Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and knew that she wanted to work for the studio. She sought out jobs in animation across Hollywood in order to gain more experience. Eventually, she applied to work with Walt Disney, who was impressed with her portfolio. Holland was also an accomplished musician, and Walt Disney consulted her while choosing music for his Silly Symphonies and Fantasia. She storyboarded scenes for Make Mine Music, and she created concept art for Bambi.
Yeah, music was such a big part of Disney in the early days because of the Silly Symphonies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Fantasia and, you know... And so she was the one that put the piece from the Nutcracker in Fantasia. And a lot of people really consider that to be such an important moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, the ballet really wasn't popular in the United States, but that kind of reinvigorated mm-hmm. interest.
Yeah. It's one of the ballets that I always recognize when a piece mm-hmm. of music from it comes on. I'm like,
yeah.
I remember that one.
Yes.
And for sure happened when watching Fantasia. And it's funny thinking about our watch through of all of the animated classics, how stacked with the music stuff mm-hmm. the early days are.
Yes.
Because you've got your Snow White and your Bambi and stuff, but throughout it was like, all right, three music ones in a row. It may not be as interesting as like a full story movie, but like the animation is still just as top notch as the rest. It's all beautiful. Yeah.
Although animator Mary Blair would go on to be one of the most influential animators in the early days of Disney animation, she was unsure about working at the studio. Blair and her husband both worked for Ub Iwerks, a former chief animator at Disney who broke off from Walt's studio and created his own.
I remember that name. Yeah. Talked about that one before.
Yeah.
In 1940, Iwerks' studio folded, and Disney absorbed most of the company, and Mary Blair reluctantly accepted a job in Walt Disney's story department.
Ub Iwerks officially is credited with creating the multiplane camera.
Blair worked in Disney's story department, but didn't like working under Disney's animators and quit. But Walt was taken by Blair's art and her unique style. He invited her and her husband, Lee, on the now famous Goodwill Tour of South America. The Goodwill Tour was an effort by the U.S. government to combat Nazi influence in South American countries during World War II. Officials asked prominent entertainers to visit several South American countries and incorporate aspects of their culture in Hollywood films. While on tour, Mary Blair was inspired by the beauty of each country and had what she considered to be an artistic breakthrough. Walt Disney was impressed by her drawings and offered Mary a role as art supervisor for Saludos Amigos and The Three Caballeros.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Her story to me is amazing because she is one of the most influential animators.
Yeah.
And, you know, she started working at Disney and she was like, this ain't it, actually. I don't really like working under these guys.
This ain't the vibe.
They're not super cool.
I don't want to get chased to my office.
Yeah. She was like, I actually don't need this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually good.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was like, I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah,
and
I'm better
I'd
than
rather
this.
Illustrate books anyway. I don't really want to. I'm good.
Yeah.
And Disney was like, no, please come back. And I think that's so. It's this guy who was like, you know, not too long ago was like, oh, well, I mean, women don't belong here.
Yeah.
And he's like, wait, actually,
but like, please,
I kind of need you. Could you come back? Yeah. And her husband, Lee.
Yeah.
Was an animator as well.
Okay.
And they animated together and they were both hired in at Disney together. And he continued on as an animator when she left.
Okay.
And so he was the one that was going to go on the tour with Disney and she was also invited to go. And Disney was just so blown away by her use of color.
Yeah.
He said things like, you know, you must see colors differently than I do. Like he was so, and it was true. Like she was like the pop artist of this the studio.
Yes, I mean, I do think about those movies and the colors of the birds. They pop out.
Yeah, dude. It's honestly the perfect match for those because because those movies are very Latin American influenced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the bright colors, like even in the clothes of normal day, are a lot brighter than something Americans would wear at the time. It's just like the color theory going on here is the perfect match.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find a good example of her work. Sharp lines.
Sharp lines, yeah.
You know, these beautiful watercolor.
Pops of
Yeah. And just very vibrant, lively imagery.
Man. That looks like vector art right now.
But
oh my God.
Yeah.
But like that style has lived on. Especially the different colored main title piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think oh my God, she's my hero. But like seriously, I feel totally awestruck by that artwork because that is that is straight up what graphics are inspired by now.
Blair continued to work for Disney Animation for several years, influencing films like Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, and Peter Pan. She left Disney again in the early 1950s and created art for advertising campaigns, Broadway productions, and Golden Books.
Yeah.
Can you picture advertisements from the 1950s?
Yes.
And you think about her art, you can see it.
I can see it.
You've seen her art without realizing it.
Yep.
110%. My goodness. I love that she just leaves Disney again. Like,
bye. Yeah, she's like, actually, I'm good. Like, I really am.
You know, like, been great, but I'm still good. Like, I still...
But, like, we could be friends, but, like, I'm going to move on. Ultimately, she would return to Disney to design It's a Small World, the company's 1964 World's Fair project that would eventually become a permanent fixture in the theme park. Mary Blair is often credited with bringing modern art to Disney, influencing the look and feel of not only the films, but the theme parks as well.
You know, it's funny because some of the classic rides...
Yeah.
Still have that vibe. Like,
yes.
People think the outside, the exterior of It's a Small World is super weird, but I think it's fabulous. It's this weird, geometric, totally modern art of that time.
Yep.
And it's beautiful. Like,
whoa.
Yeah.
It's so weird and doesn't fit at all, but I love it so much. And that is totally the same vibe.
Her style, like what I showed you guys, like, you know, and we'll have images in the blog too, but you know, it's honestly synonymous with that time, with the kind of the futuristic art of the 50s, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like kind of like future 50s, you know, like, what I'm saying?
We would call it retro future now, but it's one of my absolute favorite styles.
Yeah.
Obviously, I am still gushing about it.
Yeah,
but that like
Mary Blair,
that retro future like sci-fi.
Yes,
thing,
yeah.
Tomorrowland is covered in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I love it.
Her bold color contrast and distinctive art style changed Disney and animation forever. This group of women are just a few of the early Disney animators that influenced the studio. In recent years, books like The Queens of Animation by Natalia Holt and Ink and Paint, The Women of Walt Disney's Animation, shed light on the careers of early female Disney animators. However, you probably won't find much mention of these artists in Walt Disney's biographies. In fact, author Natalia Holt even recalled seeing Mary Blair referred to simply as Lee's wife.
The audacity.
Yeah. Man.
And we just talked about her.
Yeah.
Right? And how influential she was in the art. You know, that's maybe not how we always referred to her.
Yeah.
But how hard is it to say Mary, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, truly.
Yeah. Truly.
Dude.
Yeah.
I might have to buy a Mary Blair piece.
Yeah.
And put it in my house. I like
Yes. It seemed that Walt Disney eventually came around on the idea of hiring women. In 1941, he was quoted saying, "The girl artists have the right to expect the same chances for advancement as men. And I honestly believe they may contribute something to this business that men never would or could." Although some may find this quote dripping with condescension, it was still a progressive statement for the time. Yeah.
I saw that quote everywhere when I was doing research. I mean, I mean, the words are there, I guess.
Yeah. A little bit. I mean, he still calls them girl artists.
He still calls them girls, and he says they may contribute something.
Yeah.
And it just feels, but the thing is though, it is the 1940s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most people are not hiring women.
Yeah. Yep.
As animators. So
he's, He's taking baby steps.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he's trying not to be labeled that, but yet
he's the most progressive man of 1941.
Yeah. He doesn't want to be seen as a communist.
Right, right.
Or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Great, you know, good job, Walt. You're going in the right direction, but like pick up the pace. Yeah. Can you not say girl, please?
Yeah. It's like the disconnect. You can hear it, you know? He's like, well, the men and the girls.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like...
And he's not even thinking about that.
He's not.
He's just saying, yeah.
Yeah, without any thought behind it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily intent to degrade.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, you are. You're belittling them solely by saying a different word. Yeah.
Because it's also kind of like, he's not saying that they can contribute the same things that men can, or better than the men can.
Mm-hmm.
It's just things that men never would or could. So, you know, maybe those girlier things that men wouldn't put into things.
Right.
You know, that's kind of what it sounds like. Oh, well, they'll put in the flowery, emotional stuff that maybe the men might not be as good at or would do. I don't know. That's what it sounds like. But, you know. 53 years later, in 1994, Walt Disney Animation hired Ellen Woodbury, its first woman supervising animator. Yay. I mean, that was, you know, many years after, but...
53 years later, yeah, after Walt said that. Later.
And time.
Yeah. The same. Okay. Beyond Disney Animation, women animators continued to make film and TV history. Brenda Banks, one of the first black women in animation, started her career in the 1970s and worked on Ralph Bakshi's satirical film Coonskin. Her other credits include Wizards, Lord of the Rings, various Looney Tunes projects, Tiny Toons, and The Pagemaster. Banks began working in animation when there were very few black animators in the industry, and not much has changed. According to an article by Scripps News in 2022, only about 4% of animators are African American.
I mean, that's an abysmal number. I hope that it's climbed a little bit since then. That was 2 years ago.
I hope so too.
And you know, I mean, maybe they're just referring to American animators.
That's true.
You know, they might not be referring to people across the world.
Yeah.
But
that's a good point.
Yeah, but that's a very low number.
While there are more people of underrepresented genders and people of color in animation than before, there is still a huge lack of diversity. We can only hope that sharing the stories of the women that blazed the trail in early animation will inspire more artists to pursue the medium.
I think that in the same way, you know, there are more people coming out to say that animation is not just a genre. It's not just for kids, that same thing.
Yeah.
It, hopefully people of influence will say the same things as like animation is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Working in animation is for everyone. Yeah. Anyone can do it if they want to, that kind of thing. So it's like, you know, the mentality of animation in multiple ways is hopefully changing for the better. And, and hopefully we'll be able to see a big impact.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, just, you know, in the last few years, we've been seeing more stories, more just characters being represented that were not represented before. You know, it took Disney a really, really long time to make a Black Princess movie.
Yeah,
like it took a really, really long time for that to happen, you know? And, you know, just like stuff like that. I mean, now it's, you know, it's not nearly at where it should be. But there are movies like Turning Red. You know, that's a really cool movie that could not have been made, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah,
even.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because
absolutely not.
Yeah, and so it's nice that, you know, there's more inclusion, hopefully.
Yeah.
We do see some of the results of good or bad. Like, you know, yes, they did eventually have a Black princess with Princess the Frog. They do have more representation of you know, genders and LGBT stuff. Mm-hmm. It, yeah. Like, you know, they have characters in other movies, like Pixar movies and stuff. But then take Strange World, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That movie was like pushed under the rug almost. Mm-hmm. You know, that's at least what it felt like. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not perfect. There's still so much to be done. There's so much that can be done. And I hope that we'll get to see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Women have always played a role in animation history. Today, their influence continues to inspire modern artists. We could spend hours discussing the accomplishments of the artists we mentioned today and the ones we left out. But since we can't do that, we urge anyone interested in learning more to continue researching on your own. We will have our sources listed on our website, including Natalia Holt's book, The Queens of Animation. As our final Animation April comes to a close, it feels right to discuss these often overlooked stories from the medium's history. We are hopeful that the industry will continue to change and grow, allowing for even better and more inclusive storytelling. And if anyone ever tells you that you don't belong in your chosen field, remember that Walt Disney and many others believed that women didn't belong in animation, and how history has proven them wrong. We've been studying movies and TV for over 5 years now, and this week's topic reminded us that no matter how much you think you know, there's always more to learn.
Absolutely. Always. For sure.
Always. And that is an Animation April closed. That was a good one.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby. I even only got like half all right. My hands together.
Well, the timing is all that matters.
It's all that matters. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you enjoyed our Animation April.
Yes.
We will see you again in June for June Tunes, maybe?
Or something.
Possibly.
Or
we'll figure
something.
It out. Yeah.
Keep but, you updated. But we'd like to thank our patrons, John, Jacob, JD, Anthony, Shelley, Bob. Yeah, all right.
Yep. I'm like, you got it.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And we will see you again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.